welcome to the Juxtaposition Podcast. I'm Denise, and today we have a guest. Ruth Pan, a local filmmaker and writer, has joined us today to talk about neurodiversity and to help us answer the question, what if it's not a disease? How are you today, Ruth?
I'm doing great. It's lovely to see you. I'm really excited to be here. I think the topic that we're, or topics that we're going to discuss today are things that we need to shed more light on. Definitely.
Yeah, we're here to have those tough conversations.
It's really important. I might be a little tired in my voice.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just helped some friends move. And so that was exhausting on Sunday.
Yeah, who moved?
Got some friends named Betty and Adam. Just went rented a house. It's their first time in a house, so we stayed over, and I don't think we left until like 2 a.m.
So they got a yard too?
Yep, front and back.
That's so fun when you first get it until you have to take care of it every week.
I know. It's so annoying. And they have two dogs too. So
that'll be nice for the dogs.
Yeah.
So Ruth, in the past, being homosexual and transgender were considered a mental illness, a disease, if you will. And today they're considered an identity, although conversion therapy and other harmful practices continue. Now we look at autism spectrum disorder, or ASD, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, which are still called diseases today. Not to mention, you know, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, you know, hello, has disorder in the name,
yeah.
Right? All of these things that right now are considered a mental illness, can we look at them instead as part of an identity? And all of these things share a commonality. They're all non-neurotypical. This means they all look different on brain scans. So you can tell a person's transgendered by looking at their brain scan. Their different regions activate differently. Same thing with same-sex attraction. All of these things are non-neurotypical. So do you think that ASD and ADHD can also be viewed as an identity?
I definitely think it's possible, because I do know people who have been diagnosed or who think they have ADHD or different mental illnesses, if you will, on these spectrums. Really, I mean, what is an identity? You know, it's really what society tells you it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's another label. And how we define it really is just how everyone else defines it. Like, we have to find our own meaning, I think.
Yeah.
They're socially constructed, like I was saying. So they can change over time, too, because, you know, words have different definitions. So
yeah.
I feel like ADD or ADHD is still evolving. There's still a lot we don't know.
Well, we're learning a lot now. I mean, now that you mention it, researchers now are saying, like, we totally named this thing wrong.
Right.
Like, the name does not even fit what's going on here.
And it's just really, like, messed up to put the type of emphasis that we do on these different mental disorders or illnesses, even those two words.
Or differences.
Or
right?
Differences, yeah.
Yeah. That's why I like non-neurotypical. It just means I'm different. My brain is different.
Yeah, versus like
something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a disease, you know. Mm-hmm. We're going to treat you with medication. This is the treatment plan. Like, that's what are we doing? Like, that's really messed up.
We don't need a cure. There is no cure. We're okay with there not being a cure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how these ideas are interlinked and how people traditionally thought of them versus, like you mentioned, how much research is happening. But these ideas aren't disseminated widely enough, I think, for there to be this cultural shift we need in order to be more accepting.
That's why we have to talk about it.
Yep. That's why we're here.
Sorry. Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, even myself, I mean, I'm a great example, I think, with different experiences that I've had. For example, when I was younger in high school, around 15, 16 years old. Well, first of all, we had moved to Taiwan like 3 years before that California.
Okay, California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a weird story. Well, not weird, but it was typical of the 80s. Like, my parents moved to America. They got educated while my mom got her MBA. Mm-hmm. She was pregnant with me the whole time. But my dad couldn't like go over for like another year. So she had her own hardships. But then she was very driven by money. Mm-hmm. I don't think we talked about this yet. That's why, like, my whole upbringing, it was very stereotypical Chinese or Asian mom. You have to get good grades in school so you can go to college, so you can get a good job and have a good career, and then down the line, get married, have kids.
Yeah.
Like, the whole progression was kind of laid out, but you could feel it. Living in Taiwan, you can feel that structure is kind of put down for everyone to follow.
How old were you when you moved to Taiwan?
Around 13.
So you were telling me that you had moved to Taiwan.
Yes.
Okay. And then when you were about 15 or so?
Yeah. That's when things were happening again, where my parents finally decided to get divorced. And then I was realizing I might be bisexual. I had to kind of figure that out on my own, because when I tried to tell my mom, I spent several times, like maybe 5 or 6 or even 7 times to tell her in the car on the way to the movie theater when we could go see movies. She would just dismiss it and laugh it off and be like, oh, you know, you're not gay. This is just a phase for you. I mean, I like girls in college, but you'll get over it. Something like that. And then we wouldn't really talk about it again because she didn't want to talk about it. Finally, there was a day where I was just like, okay, I can't keep this in any longer. I have to sit her down and tell her straight up, this is real, mm-hmm. Mom. You're going to have to deal with it, essentially. Yeah. So I did come out to her. I told her what I felt and how I thought and why. I explained to her, but she wasn't really receptive of the message still. You know what she did? I would say she almost had a breakdown. I was trying to tell her, you know, somebody who's really close to you and you expect that they'll still love you after you tell them something like this. But you know what she did? She just straight up cried and went to her room. And she didn't talk to me for like a week. It was just, it was miserable. Really, really demeaning too, in a way, because it was just like, no, I'm not going to support you in this. And we're not going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And she emotionally distanced herself from you.
Yes, exactly. And then about a week later, she gave me a bunch of research that she did on homosexuality. And it wasn't very positive. I'll tell you that. Yeah. It was things like what parents are supposed to do if they're raised in a Christian household, or conversion camps you can send your child to, or, you know, other nasty things like that. And that was crushing. Okay. It was just not cool. But she didn't realize that. She thought she was helping.
Yeah. Let me fix you.
Yeah.
Let me fix this broken part of you.
And I think my mom has that streak in her. But it's like, Mom, it's my identity. It's not like you can't choose this.
Right.
Which is, I think she still believes that it's a choice.
I talked a little bit about conversion therapy, and then your mom pulled out the conversion therapy card.
She was actually thinking about sending me to one of the camps. Like, she was like, you know, this is going to cost this much. You're going to go for this long. We'll take you out of school.
Where was it?
It was somewhere in America, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. It was in one of those Midwest states, I think.
I'm going to guess Colorado.
Maybe.
Focus on the family. I'm looking at you.
That was terrible. Like, yeah. It was so demeaning. And when my brother came out, actually, she realized she couldn't really enforce that on us, because that's something that she just decided herself. She never really consulted us or really talked to us as people. But then I told her, Mom, this is something that isn't a choice. I'm going to be lesbian for the rest of my life. And actually, you're not caught up with the times. Plenty of lesbians are achieving great things in their lives and they don't give a shit. And I think it's also about finding your community as part of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that's really important. Not just understanding yourself, but like having that support system that can really
offer you
better advice than your mom.
Right.
Yeah. Because, I mean, she can't relate, right? So. Yeah.
Well, this question that we're considering today, it came from an article published on Medium by Catherine Reynolds Lewis. And in her article, she quotes Jiwa Onaiwu, a Black woman, who said she's surprised to see mainstream society tout multiculturalism, racial diversity, and queer acceptance while still blatantly discriminating against brain-based differences. Notably, non-speaking autism and schizophrenia. Nobody would dare say I should bleach my skin or straighten my hair or have a name that's more Eurocentric, she said. And yet, most early childhood autism intervention programs focus on multiple hours a day of controlling practices aimed at forcing neurodivergent children to conform to neurotypical standards. People don't see disability as an identity. It's a condition to be cured. No, we don't want a cure for part of our neurology. That's part of who we are. Just like there's no cure for Blackness. I thought that was an interesting perspective. as a person who has been diagnosed with ADHD and attentive type, and like she mentioned schizophrenia, and mm-hmm. my father is schizophrenic.
Okay.
I can't help but look at like all the parts of ADHD that need therapy, chemical, medicinal, and behavioral. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I'm non-neurotypical, but I'm living in a neurotypical world. And I want to be myself, yeah, but I also want to function adequately enough to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be loved by my family and my friends. I want to succeed at my work so that my clients are happy and I contribute to my household finances. I want to achieve goals. And to do that, I need medication. Otherwise, like I would flutter from like project to project and I would not finish anything.
That sounds like me.
Yeah. So my mom reminded me recently that when I moved out of her house, I was 18.
Uh-huh.
She cleaned the room. Like she actually like didn't just clean the room. She totally, it's not a bedroom anymore.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was like that, y'all.
Dang. My mom's probably in the process of doing the same thing with my childhood room in Taiwan, actually.
But how long ago did you move out of that room?
It was like only 5 years. Yeah. So not
my
as long
mom
as you probably.
Like 6 months.
Okay.
Maybe not even that. So when she cleaned out the room, she found like 25 unfinished sewing projects.
Wow.
And to be fair, sewing is not my favorite thing to do. It's hers. And I can finish projects, but medicine helps. And really what makes me successful in projects is I need co-conspirators. I work better when other people are involved. Like for piano lessons, I have a student that I'm collaboratively teaching.
Mm-hmm.
For the podcast, I work with a co-host, which is usually Issa, but she has taken some much deserved time off today.
Yes, much, much deserved.
She worked so hard. And for my cooking blog, I work alone, and it's the project that I work on the least. I'm great with taking photos of like my cooking processes and the finished product. Like that's easy. I always have my phone on me, just snap, right? But I'm horrible at sitting down and writing it out. Like writing content mm-hmm. is my weakness. During my diagnosis for ADHD, they test your IQ. Did they do that for yours yet?
No, not yet. We haven't gone through
like
everything
the whole thing
yet. Yeah.
Got you.
So still in the process.
Got you. Well, so it turns out that like my IQ on like visual written content is like considerably lower than my verbal IQ. And I didn't even know there were like two different kinds of IQ, guys,
mm-hmm.
but like it's like way lower. And it wasn't surprising because I deal with a bit of dyslexia and that's a common comorbidity with ADHD.
Well, send me the link to your cooking blog.
Yeah, it's cookingsingle.net.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. I'll check that out.
Cool. So with all of this, do I want to fight against making me more neurotypical? I don't think I do. Like, I do want ADHD to be more fully recognized and accepted as a disability.
Right.
You know, I want reasonable accommodations for us in the workplace. I think that would change our success and career trajectory. I mean, like, that could just change the world for people. Studies show that we make less over the course of our lifetime. Like, we have trouble fitting into that mold that
you know,
we're supposed to.
This reminds me of, like, remember when left-handed people were discriminated against?
Yeah.
So I feel like it's very similar.
No doubt.
Well, not the same thing. Obviously, it's very, very different. But the circumstances,
mm-hmm. yeah.
if you will.
Yeah. And just for example, someone who uses a wheelchair for mobility purposes, you know, needs accommodation so that they can travel in the workspace, right? An ADHD person, they may need a variety of work.
Right. Like not the same task
over and over again. Or maybe we need like I can tell you that one like there was a promotion that I was going for and I tried for this promotion 7 times and I never got it. And you know why I never got it? Because you have to pass a multiple choice test.
Oh, dang.
And I can't like I literally can't do it. It took me 3 tries to pass the written driver's test.
Okay.
When I was 15 or whatever. That's super simple, common sense, right? There's something about multiple choice tests that my brain just freaks out and suddenly starts reasoning about how each answer could be true. It's so weird. Now, if I was given open-ended questions, like the promotion that I was going for, there's nobody in the job that I did that knew more about my job and was ready to move up than me. I'm super confident in that.
You should have gotten it. I mean...
Yeah, but they wouldn't. And I actually went in and asked for accommodation and they wouldn't make an accommodation for me. Hello, ADA.
That just is not right. I mean, even when a company says they accommodate all yeah. types of people.
Well, we actually they worked there at the really, same time in the
yeah,
same place.
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. That's why I said you should have gotten it.
Yeah. I know, it's crazy. So I think it would be really great to have those accommodations and not feel like you're putting people out just because you're different. That can kind of factor into, this is about me saying I don't want to be neurotypical when, man, my life would be so much easier if I were, right?
Right.
But it is about being accepted, people with disabilities, period.
Right.
All disabilities mm-hmm. being accepted as it's an identity and one that we shouldn't bat an eye at. If somebody tells me they're gay, I'm like, okay, cool, you're gay, yeah. whatever. Like, all right, you didn't even tell me, yo. I didn't even, you know, like, I'm not trying to date you, I'm married, you know, like, why do I need to know who you go for? But like, okay, whatever, right?
I definitely agree. I mean, there's just so much that's we put so much, like what I was saying before, those negative connotations on, where it's just like, we should just be loving each other, you know? It doesn't yes. matter if you have a disability or if you're, mm-hmm. like you were saying, non-neurotypical. Like, mm-hmm. it shouldn't matter. I mean, yeah, we should have accommodations. Like,
yeah.
that should just be obvious.
But I think what it takes whatever to reason, change yeah. it is just like, you know, what really changed, what really was the tipping point in getting acceptance for homosexuality and LGBTQIA in the United States was people coming out. And the consequences that they faced were dire. People died.
Yeah.
And yet they didn't stop coming out.
Mm-hmm. Much like the civil rights movement as yeah, well.
Right.
And women's rights.
They stood and were like, I want to be counted. Yeah. Count me. Mm-hmm. I'm here. Count me. I'm not going away. Count me. And I think that is what it's going to take for people with disabilities as well, or non-neurotypical people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Alternative reflections.
Place as top species on Earth is threatened by climate change and our own idiocy. I believe I have found the next species that will dominate once the Anthropocene era comes to an end. Raccoons. Oh. Raccoons are prolific, adaptable little creatures mm-hmm. with their permanent bandit mask and flexible fingers and toes. They've been especially adept at adjusting to this human-dominated environment, mm-hmm. and I don't think they'll be fazed when it's no longer dominated by us. In the news recently, raccoons have taken over the White House lawn. They harass visitors and news anchors alike. Twitter is circulating video footage of Secret Service agents wrangling them and of news anchors throwing shoes at them to scare them away. Across the country, at San Francisco's Golden Gate Park, a posse of 14 raccoons has teamed up to harass parkgoers in similar fashion, trolling for food in broad daylight. In my own home recently, two raccoons moved into my attic and claimed it as both their nesting site and bathroom. Oh, the joys of being a homeowner in times such as these. So hats off to you, wily raccoons. I only hope that you are able to make better decisions with your time as the dominant species than we poor humans.
Do better.
Fucking raccoons.
Oh my God. First of all the, I don't know about the White House. They are doing the Lord's work, but you're like, get this motherfucker out of here. He is trash.
We'll do better. We're taking over. We've decided. There's been a committee.
We the committee of trash pandas are coming to get this other trash panda the fuck up out of here.
He's got like a reverse bandit mask.
Oh my God.
Maybe they just think that, oh, there's he's a raccoon in the White House.
So he's a pretty big raccoon. Not, he may know where all the food is.
He's an albino raccoon.
He know where all the food at.
But he does, though.
He does.
Wonder if he'll buy them Burger King.
Probably. You know, I'm the best president. None of the animals have ever came and seen any of the other presidents. I'm the best one to do. He's like, and no other president cares about the animals. Nobody cares about the trash pandas but you with your trash ass.
I really think that they're going to, you know. So the Anthropocene era is like the era of human domination, like anyway, and that's the era that we're in right now. Mm. And so I think that they're gonna be the next.
Ready.
Yeah. I'm calling it. calling it. You heard it here first, folks.
Hilarious. The ratchet of it. The ratchet of it. We're gonna talk about the internet, or I like to call it the interwebs.
I am totally over the interwebs right now. The internet. What do you say I was? I am Izza.
You are not Izza of the interwebs.
I am not Izza of the interwebs. I am not. I've always felt some kind of way about feeling like this is because I'm in technology. Like, that's my baby. Like, I went to school for computers. I work in technology now, and I want to continue to work in technology. However, bro, I don't trust the fucking internet. I never did. My generation built the internet or the web of what it is now and what it's going to be or whatever, right? And so we knew, like, the dark side of it. And there's still a very dark side of the internet. The internet is not a happy place.
It's ratchet.
But it's super ratchet. So sorry, I'm a little excited about the internet because this is at least to why the internet is ratchet. Internet dating.
Oh.
Okay, so first of all, I'm on TikTok and I have a very small presence on TikTok. When I say I have two posts, and this was, I did not want to go back. I went to TikTok and I had made a couple of videos because I thought it was fun. I was like, oh, this is cute. You know what I'm saying? I'm super addicted to this app, though, and I don't like it. I just don't like that feeling that I have to sit here and, like, hours pass and I'm still on this app.
Yeah.
So I feel some kind of way about that. Like, I had some reins on it when it came to Facebook because Facebook, like, allows you, and TikTok does too, from what I found out, but Facebook, if I don't want to follow you or see you, I can still be your friend, but I don't have to see nothing that you talk about on your newsfeed. And I'm fine with that. And so it only puts things, I guess how the algorithm works is that they put things inside of it that makes, you know,
a reaction to you.
Yeah. So, if anybody hasn't seen it, I did mention it on the last podcast, the social
dilemma.
The social dilemma. If you haven't seen it, go back, double back, because it's a thing. It's real. They make these algorithms up that caters to you, what you like. The video that you see, how long you watch it, it's a big thing. And I believe it's a thing. You know why I believe it's a thing? Because the super gurus that built that shit in the fucking documentary, they're scared of it. How do you build something that you are yourself scared of, sir?
Dr. Frankenstein.
Oh my God. Like, they've built this machine, and these people are also people that are not of the internet. Their children and their children's children don't have screen time. To me, I am this small part of this bigger system that preys on people with that mind. Like, if I'm doing it and I have no means to kind of like buy the things that they advertise on my news feed, or I'm not influenced to go do a trend. Like, I don't want to do these things. You know, I like looking at other people do it. It's kind of funny sometimes. Some of it is long and drawn out. It's ridiculous. Like, the thirst traps on TikTok, like, they are very pleasing to the eye. But it also...
Are you talking about your secret boo?
Oh, my God. I have a TikTok crush, y'all. Yeah. That when I tell you, she's so fine.
And she, like, is down the street, right?
Oh, my God. Like, I don't know what TikTok did. TikTok was like, oh, you live right here? Oh, but she live over here. Ain't she cute? And I was like, yeah, she is TikTok. Okay. See? This is the whole point. What happens with, like, social media and the internet and we watching and seeing all these people? I think our mind wants us to mimic what we see, or we want to be like these people. And then you have all these people that have this warped thinking of what society is supposed to be. And we're not doing things for the sake of someone else. We're doing it for likes. We're doing it for this. And some of the stuff is just not authentic at all. And just, like, to piggyback on the whole, like, internet dating thing, bruh, I don't know if they just like this on this app or just on social media, period, but nobody seems authentic. You can't date. We don't have regular dating now. Like, I'm used to, like, going out, meeting people, and, like, seeing someone that is a gay. You are a gay. I like gays. Right. Let's be friends and do other gay things. Right. You know what I mean? However, you gotta go to the internet. And so you get this little script of who this person is. There's so many other elements that there's no fields for. There's no checkbox. Mm-hmm. Oh, I live with my mama, or I live with my adult
I have IBS. Sorry. I know.
I'm going to let that go.
I mean, don't you wish you
never had that? I wish it was. Absolutely. Absolutely. However, the things that you don't know about a person that you have to delve in deep. And I'm looking at these like internet relationships and these happy stories. I'm so happy for y'all. For I'm going to let y'all finish. However, is there nothing that is private to you and your boo? First of all, if I'm with you, how about fuck this phone?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to take, let's take a couple of pictures, but I'm here to spend time with you. Please put the phone down. That was the point of us hanging out.
Right.
Put your phone down. I'm like Erykah Badu right now. Put your phone down. I can make you put your phone down. I mean, and technically, girl, I can, but and the interwebs has pulled us into this like vortex of following a trend, being like everybody else, feeling some kind of way about what you don't have. When I see these internet relationships or how internet dating goes, like right now, it's not a turn on. It's not what the whip is. Everybody can't be single. Like, how are you that fine talking about you single? Bitch, you crazy. And I need you to put that in the video too. Okay, I've been single for 6 years, but why though? I'm not saying you can't be single by choice, but I'm for sure you done bumped into somebody you don't liked in them 6 years, and it was either some element of yourself or some element of them that made it not work. And that's where the internet or the interwebs puts a cloud on all that shit. I think it's super ratchet for the interwebs or people to allow the interwebs to have them following this trend of what it should be, or I should look like this, or if I am not looking like this, then no one will want me. Look, you get what you get. And you don't pitch a fit. All I gotta say about that. Come get these folks, Denise.
I don't disagree with anything that you said. But I do want to let you know, you sound old as fuck right now.
That was
but
real.
You do.
I'm just saying, I am a little older than you, ma'am. Yeah.
Whatever happened to worry about yourself?
Well, that part too. It's crazy. It's what it is. I don't care if I'm old.
Back in my day.
What we used to do. We had group chats, group rooms.
We used to walk up the hill to school barefoot both ways.
Your
in
mama.
The snow. All right. Well, you know what it is.
Now, don't get in your feelings about what you just heard. It's just a position.